We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. /compatibility.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Yep, it's the world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne Tha God, Angela Yee. Envy is not here. Envy, he's actually out the country, but we got family in the building, man. The brothers from Earn Your Leisure, Rashad and Troy, and the master investor, Ian Dunlap, is here. What's happening, my people?
What's going on,
brother? Back long time no see.
I know, right?
I just want to say, Ian Dunlap looks official.
Ian always come official. When did Ian not look official?
I'm just saying.
He's on his Ian St. Patrick today.
Ian don't got no regular clothes. Everything, nothing but suits.
You got to dress how you want to be addressed.
That's what he sleeps
in. That's a fact. You heard what he said? No, that's real. Say it again.
You got to dress how you want to be addressed.
Woo. That's real.
I heard that.
So why is you dressed how you want to be addressed?
It's how I want to be addressed.
As a mom? Like moms?
The tea and coffee connoisseur she is.
Yeah. You got the lumberjack thing going on.
That's what I'm blessed with.
But Market Mondays, man. Tell us about that at the Hulu Theater, Madison Square Garden on November 27th.
Yes, yeah. So it's really, really big. Not only just, you know, we're doing a show in Madison Square Garden on Black Friday weekend. That's obviously tremendously important for the city and for the culture, but I think that it just speaks volumes of where we're at right now, where we can sell out a venue like, you know, MSG Hulu Theater, and we're not rapping, we're not playing basketball, we're teaching about financial literacy, but it's a vibe. So, you know, it's something that's extremely encouraging and really, really dope to see so many people enthusiastic about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be a night to remember. I actually want to say something, if I can, a surprise. That we gonna break.
Yeah,
let's
break.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So, nobody's heard this news before. Save this for this moment.
So, all right. So our shows are vibes. You guys know. You've been to Invest
Education
Fest.
And vibes.
Oh, you haven't been to a show yet.
No, I don't think so.
You gotta come, brother.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane. We couldn't even walk down the hallway.
Yeah,
this is true.
But that's because Steve Harvey was there.
Just because of Steve, Jesus Christ. Steve was there because of them.
Yeah. He's our partner.
They were like, no one could go in the hallway right now. I was back there with Rashad's mom.
That's a fact.
But so for Madison Square, we got a dope lineup. We got my guy Mouse Jones to open it up with Trap Karaoke.
Yes.
We got DJ Sus one on the one and twos.
Sussy in the City.
Yes. Sussy
in the City. Yeah, that's the whole team.
So we got Peter Tuckman. He's the Einstein of Wall Street. The guy's been on Wall Street for like 30 years. He's a genius when it comes to stock investing. We got Don Peebles, who's a billionaire real estate developer working on building the first black owned skyscraper in New York City. And then we got our guy Jadakiss to perform. I thought it would be only right to have Jadakiss in the building.
We got to.
And then, you know, Ian is going to give his masterful performance. Yeah.
But you're going to perform too?
No, I'm going to teach. That's fine. But no, I try to make sure in the education that it is entertaining. Because we've all been to seminars and it's really boring.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be covering the 25 stocks to invest in and 50 to stay away from. The 2 crypto I like, the 10 to stay away from, and how to make $22,000 a day from trading. But I have to make some calls. We got a little special guest coming in.
Yeah. So we're going to have a sit-down conversation with none other than the champ, Floyd Money Mayweather.
Wow.
Be in the building.
Isn't he invested in skyscrapers too in New York?
Absolutely.
He's a great investor. I think that's one of the things people overlook, right? They see him, you know, spending money, but they don't realize what he's doing in business. So the commercial real estate is something. He's also invested in NASCAR. He has a lot. His portfolio is so expansive, but people tend to overlook that. And so to sit down with him to go over that, and I feel like he's wanted to talk about it for so long, but people just, you know, they just want to hear boxing. But like now, he has a great mind and a great business.
And he got the tallest building in New York.
He's
I think.
Part of the 93-story Vanderbilt in Midtown. Yeah. You know, so his portfolio, he has that under his investment portfolio. But there's like 8 other skyscrapers in New York that nobody even thinks of. Floyd Mayweather when they think of it, but he's definitely part of it.
And he changed the game for sports too. He's the first guy to make $100 million in one fight, $200 million.
Like
you know, the way he revolutionized boxing and being his own. You know, entity as a business, as opposed to, you know, everybody else that's working with promoters for such a long period of time, and him and Al Haymon, what they've been able to do on the business side, I don't think he gets enough credit for it. And he has an all-black team too.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
When you look at Al Haymon, when you look at Leonard Ellerbe, you know, I don't think Floyd actually gets enough credit for his business acumen. So to have a conversation with Champ at Madison Square Garden is going to be legendary.
That's a huge deal, and I'm sure he had some fights there too.
Yeah.
So for him to go there in a different type of
I mean, you think of the greatest fights in the Madison Square Garden. Obviously, you think Ali Frazier. You think about all the great heavyweights that have come there. To have this, probably one of the greatest of all time, come but not actually sparring. He's actually going to be talking about business. I think it's just something that's monumental.
Mayweather and Jadakiss, boy, two champs
from the champs.
Definitely two champs.
He's going to bring them out.
I wonder what has more impact for y'all nowadays. Is it the podcast or the live shows? Because y'all killing with the live shows. Like you did the Garden, y'all sold out. London, with InvestFest. Like, you know, you had 12,000 in Atlanta. 14,000 in Atlanta. How many in London?
About 4,000.
4,000. Like, what's having more impact for y'all now?
If I can speak freely, I think a combination of both. Okay. Of course, they built one of the biggest podcasts in history. But I think when you get a chance to talk to people in person, it's one thing that I've prided myself on, and they have as well, as like making time for the people, interacting, shaking hands and kissing babies. So I think it's a combination of both that you need to do in order to have a sustainable model for the long term.
And he's changed the game too. I want to give him his credit because he changed the game as far as like performing. So when I say he's performing, I really mean he's performing. Like he came to InvestFest with 200 people on stage and a mask and smoke, and he was asking for all of this stuff. And I'm like, "Yo, bro, you bugging out." But then I realized,
don't you forget the tank?
Guns. He wanted guns and everything.
I'm a wrestling fan.
Okay.
So I wanted to do some of the DX. I saw you do this thing. So I wanted to have those kind of themes in there because when we go to seminars, normally I've never heard anybody say, "I went to a seminar." And man, I had a blast. You may learn something. So taking those elements from rap, Wu-Tang, Pac, WWE, WCW, and blending them all in, plus teaching you how to make money, I think is a formula. Because boring is always is going to push our people away. And if we want our people to be interested in money, investing, we have to package it in an entertaining fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since you guys are here, you know we got to talk about some things. And we
Here she go.
This is finance. This is your field because y'all just brought up crypto.
Okay. Yes. FTX?
Yes. So I want to talk about that for you to break that down because the other day we reported this This guy basically lost his $15.6 billion fortune, mm-hmm. Sam Bankman-Fried. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so how did that happen? And does that mean, because I know we sat up here and talked about it, people are already scared of crypto. I know Envy was like, I'm glad I didn't invest.
That's funny.
You know, and I know, Charlamagne, you haven't invested in crypto either, right?
No, but I believe in crypto. I just don't think that all of these different currencies are going to sustain.
What do you believe in?
Bitcoin seemed like the most stable
Ethereum.
One.
Smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smart.
All right, so let's talk about that and what that actually means, because it did make a lot of people be like, see, I told you, that's why I didn't do it.
Yeah.
We'll just go down the line with it.
Yeah.
The most important thing is, and I said this yesterday on the show, if you bring a cryptocurrency token up to your family and friends, my litmus test is always my mom, dad, and elders. And I ask them, does this sound like a scam to you? So if I'm telling you that I have a token and it's went up 9,000% or 3,000%, most of our family are going to say, hey, it's a scam. Another good litmus test, if I brought it to you, would you buy it from me? So I think one of the biggest issues that we have is that we are looking for sensational gains with no work. And everyone knows in here, you can't get 7,000%, 5,000% return without working.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was able to do is he was able to get, and we have to talk about the venture capital community, they're the ones who are funding a lot of these projects that are going belly up. So we have to start from the top down. But I don't want to say it was a scam from the beginning, but anyone who's been close to the situation, whenever you take clients' money and you put it towards your project because you're losing money, that is fraud.
Yeah. So and to give people a full explanation of what actually happened, so Sam, he had a exchange called FTX, mm-hmm. and they have a currency called FTT. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you're familiar with the crypto world, Binance, you ever heard of Binance?
Binance. Yeah.
So Binance is like the largest global platform when it comes to crypto, and they have a Binance coin. Mm-hmm. So FTT was the native currency mm-hmm. for FTX. So what ended up happening is that a report was published that FTX held a suspicious amount of FTT currency
from the competitor,
and it made Binance, who actually had a lot of FTT coins, publicly announced that they were going to be selling their FTT coins because they wasn't comfortable with the situation.
So Binance kind of ruined them.
I'm gonna go there for you.
So once Binance put that out, everybody got scared. Everybody thought that this coin is going to fall apart. So now you got to run on the bank, and everybody's trying to pull their coins out. There wasn't enough liquidity to cover everybody trying to pull their money out.
Yeah, yeah.
So when that happened, that collapsed the coin overnight, which collapsed the exchange overnight, which collapsed his fortune overnight. He lost $14.6 billion in one day. So,
damn.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So the other part is like knowing who your competition is. Mm-hmm. So you said Binance, right?
Yeah.
So in retrospect, Binance saw that they were going to collapse and said, hey, maybe we'll bail you out.
Yeah.
But in order to bail you out, we have to see your books. If we know cryptocurrency in the space, there is no regulation, so people don't have to show their books.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for me to help you, I need to see it. When they looked at the numbers, they said, wait, there's no liquidity here. I'm not doing this, right? And so now you've shown your competition the books.
Right. And now they're like, let's destroy you.
Absolutely. And now,
with the letter of intent.
With the letter of intent, part. Right? So it's like, we're going to do it on top.
Destroy completely.
Exactly.
We might help you,
but now that you've shown us that what you have, there's no way we're going to help you. And so now you're talking about an exchange that is now gone.
And now the founder of Binance is like, all right, well, let's rebuild this.
Yeah,
it's like billions.
Yo, conquer. Yeah.
In real life.
Destroy and conquer.
A Netflix documentary and billions in real time. But also, too, look at the arrogance of Sam at 30 to tell other investors, we don't want to work with you. They had no board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
And when people asked to see the financials, they said no.
Wow.
That's sign number one that
is a problem.
Yes.
Could be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, what does it do for crypto long term? Like you said, a lot of people have fear around it. I think regulation comes. I don't know
Absolutely.
How fast it comes, but it will come because people are not going to stand to see money being lost. Obviously, mm-hmm. hedge funds and managers have lost money, but people have lost money. Yeah. And the more people lose money and bigwigs lose money, regulation will come at some point to say, all right, this can't happen again.
But won't regulation scare people too, though? Because isn't one of the reasons people like Bitcoin is because it's not regulated?
But I think going into
the
election cycle, one of the biggest things that they're going to run is the safety of the people.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008 and 2009, regulations got a lot tighter. So as a result, they're going to angle it and say, and I've told people from the beginning, hedge funds and banks have put people in these crypto projects to destroy them so that the banks could then take them over.
Mm-hmm.
JP Morgan's been partnering with Ethereum. this destruction of FTX's plan. So regulation may push people away for a little bit, but it will create safety.
Ian, are you holding on to your crypto?
I'm holding on to Bitcoin and Ethereum. I like Ripple as well, but outside of that, I'm not touching. I mean, I told people last year when it was at 60,000, Bitcoin was going to come down to 20. We're a little bit underneath that. I think Ethereum is going to hit a low. I think Bitcoin may actually hit maybe 9,583. Mm-hmm. That's a price I'm looking to add some more considerably.
So you think it's still worth buying?
On sale.
If you're holding it long term. Our biggest mistake in the culture, we want to flip really fast. Mm-hmm. And I said this yesterday on the show, like, I never hear you or Steve Harvey or you ever say, hey, I'm buying these coins that no one else has heard of that everyone's talking about on Twitter mm-hmm. and Instagram. If these coins and projects are viable, everybody in the industry will be pouring their money into them.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to follow the people that are doing really well and mimic what they're doing to have long-term success. But I'm only really focused on the big three.
Now, do you think Sam can come back from this?
Yeah, he's done.
Damn.
He's done. Yeah. Well, where is he going to get money from? Okay, let's look at it like this. He has the entire financial industry against him. He ruined crypto. So he ran Alameda Research, which is their hedge fund. When you take money from clients and move it over here, it's not legal. And in every, this is the biggest point, in every recession and scandal, you need a fall guy. He is going to end up being the Bernie Madoff of crypto.
Damn.
So with Bernie, people knew what he were doing for years. There were whistleblowers that were talking about it for 5 or 6 years. It wasn't until the recession when they really put that fire out and made him be the face of it. Bernie ran the NASDAQ for many years. And they knew what was happening here with FTX and FTT. I think, unfortunately, because we're in a recession now, even though they won't announce it, he'll be the fall guy for crypto.
Wow.
You think he can go to jail? You did say it's fraud.
I mean,
we have to see.
Yeah.
You got to be careful. You got to be careful when you just, we can't just say that legally because we don't really know. It's alleged. Yeah. But you just got to wait and see.
Why are valuations so important? Because I'm just realizing that people don't realize when they see these numbers, like, oh, such and such is worth $3 billion or $4 billion, or he lost $14 billion overnight.
You know what's so crazy about the Kanye, your guy, Ye?
You know what's
so crazy about that is the day that they announced that he lost all of his money, the day before that, I was in L.A., meet Troy and 19 Keys, shout out to Keys, and we was talking, and I'm like, I have a strong suspicion that probably 90% or 80% of his wealth is in his company. I just, before any of this happened, and I'm just thinking the kind of person that I think he might be, I don't really see him having a lot of money invested in stock. And, you know, he said that $150 million was taken out of Chase, or they told him that they didn't want his money, so that probably has like $150 million liquid in a bank account. And then he probably has some real estate, and I think he owns like 5% of Skims. And that would probably lead you to have $400 million. But then it's like when you see billions of dollars, that billions of dollars is a little misleading because he doesn't have billions of dollars. That's the value of his company. And if you own 100% of the brand, then if the brand is worth $5 billion, then, you know, that's how much you're worth, right? It's like a car. If you have no money in this world and you have a Rolls Royce that's worth $200,000, then you're worth $200,000. Yeah. But if the Rolls Royce gets stolen, now you have no net worth at all. So that's what people have to really understand with this net worth list, is that a lot of times they see things and they say, okay, this person is worth $4 billion, but it's like, what is that tied to? If that's just in one company and that one company can go away like that, whether it's Sam Bankman-Fried or whether it's Ye, then that's dangerous because it's not diversified. So it's all an education process, but I think that this, at the very least, has been educational to a lot of people because they're like, how can you lose $2 billion in one day? How can you lose $14 billion in one day? Well, that's why, because all of your money is inside of your company.
What do you guys think the biggest...
I was just going to say the valuation part is like the future profitability of the company, right? And depending on what type of company you have, the valuation can change, right? And so if it's like a tech company, they may say, all right, the company's worth $100 million. Like we saw that with FaZe Clan, right? They earned $100 million, but they got a 10x multiple. And so now that 10x multiple now makes them a $1 billion company. And so it's usually around the future profitability of it. So like with Ye, like obviously he has a retail company. Well, what's the projections on retail companies? What type of valuations do they get? That's the homework that you got to do when you're in that business. So education has its own multiple, right? It could be 4x, it could be 8x. So when you take your earnings, right, and you multiply it by that number, that's how you get the future valuation of a company. That's how you become a $1 billion company.
So what's the point of that? Is it just vanity? Just to be able to say, hey, I'm worth a few billion?
In business or in general?
Just in general. Both, actually.
I mean, four projections so you can eventually sell it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the main reason that they have valuations and mm-hmm. projections. Because even the venture community, if you build up a sector, the purpose of that is to take it. We talked to Dave Rubenstein yesterday. Mm-hmm. You want to take a business, build it up, and then eventually sell it off. So that's the reason behind it. So it's not vanity per se. And I understand Ye was upset because Forbes wouldn't label him as a billionaire. Right. But that goes back to relationship. One of the things we was talking about yesterday is you have to be very careful who you make enemies with, because you don't know who can end up being the assassin in mm-hmm. your career. And that's something you talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. We have to be mindful. But in this recession, like, what are you guys personally invested in? And then I want to talk to you about how do you keep peace during times of strife? Because I know you've been big on mental health. Every time I ask you how you doing, you're like, blessed and highly favored.
I'm blessed, black, and highly favored. I mean, not every day, but for the most part, you know, the top line. You know?
Top line.
The overwhelming team.
So I want to say something, too, about Pinky, because y'all had shout out. Was that episode pre-recorded? You spoke
that
about
this
Pinky.
Morning.
Oh, yeah. I actually hosted her book launch. Yes, her book is coming out, and she's just started her book tour in New York, so I hosted that. Yeah.
Shout out to Pinky. We had her on a few times, and we had her at InvestFest. But to answer your question, it's an important question. So I really wanted to double down on that because that's something that our community is not fully aware of as far as valuations, the importance of raising capital. So she raised $25 million.
$25 million
for 25% of her company, which valued the company at $100 million, right? Because it's like, okay, now if somebody's giving you $25 million for 25%, that means your company's worth $100 million. Mm-hmm. So even understanding the importance of raising money, because it's like we have never raised any money. We've bootstrapped everything, and people have asked us like, do we want money? I'm like, no, we always have took the stance that we don't need money. But now being properly educated, I wasn't properly educated on that process, so it's like the circles that we're moving in now is a lot different. So they're educating us like, nah, it's not necessarily that you need money, but now you get outside capital for a small percent of your company, and that gives you a 10x or 20x valuation. Now you're in a position to sell even more, sell the whole company, take the company public. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so much that you can do with the leverage. And that's something that we don't fully understand because it's like we're used to just, you know, pay everything ourselves, do it ourselves, da da da. You take pride in that, and there is pride in that. But there's a whole different game where these people are building billion-dollar companies, and the companies are not even that big. Like, you know what I'm saying? Right now, you would think, like, okay, in order to have a $1 billion company, you got to do so much. Nah, not really. You just have to have the right relationships, the right information. And then it's like, okay, you can go outside right now, raise $100 million for 10% of your company. Now you have a $1 billion valuation.
I'm glad you said it, because I was just talking about that. I had the CEO of Shea Moisture on. And, you know, they invest in a lot of black-owned businesses, black and brown-owned businesses. And with my coffee company, I've always paid for everything myself. I have never raised money. And so now we're in the process of getting ready to do that. Nice. And sometimes people are really hesitant to give up a piece of their company in order to get, some capital. But if you do want to scale and grow your business, and also, like what Pinky was saying, some things you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And so that might mean I got to bring in some experts, because I also care about who invests in my company. Some people are okay with taking money and they just want a silent investor who has nothing to do with it. But I do want somebody that is going to actually add value.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the importance of having somebody who is an accountant. You can't do everything as a business owner. Sometimes you do have to have a team of people that help you, because there's no way you're going to grow your business if you're everything. For her to have 9 locations, there's no way she could be in 9 locations and handling the books and trying to grow a business and having merch and having products in store and doing and having a book tour and raising 2 kids and getting married. That's a lot of things.
It's tough.
Yeah. And so, sometimes you do need to make sure, look, I need this money to help grow my business and make sure that it's really profitable.
And grow faster, right? Because now you can hire 10 employees, you can hire publicists, you can hire so many different people. So that's important for all entrepreneurs to understand that it's not necessarily a bad thing when you're raising money. Just do it, like you said, intelligently from the right people. But if you can grow at a 10x multiple and grow faster and hire more talented people than you currently have and gain the information, that's the next level that we're not really talking about a lot in our community.
I think y'all both said it. One of the most important things is the exposure. Right. How would you know that if you weren't in the right room?
You always think, I don't want to owe anybody any money. I don't want to give up a piece of my company.
But mindset, right? Yeah. So the mindset changes when you're exposed to more things, right? And so when we get exposed to people who are in private equity and they're telling us this, it's like, wait, we had the wrong mindset. Mm-hmm. But we're telling people right now, like, we had the wrong mindset.
Yeah.
That's changing now, right? Because if we're looking at ourselves, especially from an infrastructural standpoint, like, we look at ourselves as a global entity.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why you see us in London. That's why you saw us in Nigeria. That's why you saw us in Egypt. That's why we're going to the UAE in later on today.
Today?
Slight flex.
Oh, man.
No, but that's
we were going to cancel this, but I felt okay.
But it's important. How do we do that, right? Capital helps us do that. Capital helps us build infrastructure. It helps us put people on the ground in these places so that Earn Your Leisure is not just an American brand. It's a global brand, because the issues that happen in the United States happen all over the world. And the people on the ground actually have a in-depth look at what's taking place so they can actually invoke change. So that's why it's important to build infrastructure. But being exposed to information is vitally important.
Where did this stupid-ass narrative come from that you have to own everything and put up your own money?
It's like, yo,
every company that gets to scale. Yeah.
But when you grow up in an environment when you don't own anything, the second that you actually create something, you...
Even with publishing in the music business, people will be like, oh, your own publishing, don't do this. But you see artists selling their publishing because they get a huge check right now that they're able to invest in other things for that money to grow.
We have to realize there's two sets of information. Mm-hmm. The information that we're usually given versus the sets of information that the wealthy use. That information doesn't trickle. So even when we're talking about infinite scale, we have to look at that. Like, imagine if Rockefeller, Murder, Inc., Cash Money in the 90s knew how to invest in the marketplace, they would have been one of the biggest hedge funds in the world. So the valuation game now is like knowing stocks in the 1990s. I don't want it to be 2040 and our community is now just getting this information. So if we know how to do stocks, real estate, grow business, do business together. And it's the main thing I talk to people in the culture. I'm like, if all of us came together for one project with all of our voices, talent, infrastructure, all the knowledge that we have, and like you talked about, we can raise capital. We can be worth $15, $20 billion in 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. But it's the ego that usually stops us from doing so. But there's usually two sets of information that is given. No, like even with authors, you know this. Most authors who are talking about their 7 steps to do XYZ, they don't do those 7 steps. Like even how to make money in 30 days in real estate. One of the original guys who wrote that book, my mentor helped craft that book. It was not true on how he was actually implementing. And that's when I learned, I'm like, oh, they'll sell you a piece of information, but that's not actually what they're implementing.
Like, I look at somebody like Bob Johnson, that's still the largest black acquisition, I believe, ever, right? $3 billion when he sold BET.
Viacom.
Yeah, but he did that initially. He went and got somebody to help him get to scale.
And he brought the Bobcats. So that's another thing, too. It's like, you know, people criticize Irv Gotti, and we interviewed him. That's coming out soon on Black Effect Podcast Network.
Hey.
But he spoke about, you know, why he sold his company for $100 million and is to do something else. So it's like...
Even Richie Lou Dennis from Shea Moisture.
Well, yeah, exactly. Rich is, he's a genius.
Rich is a genius.
Elon Musk sold... People forget. Elon Musk sold PayPal for $300 million.
That's right.
Yep. And then he went broke starting SpaceX, Tesla. Now he's almost worth $1 trillion. So it's like... A lot of times we have good intentions of like, keep everything, don't sell anything. Mm-hmm. And I understand it, because it's like, we do need ownership and we do need, you know, generational wealth and companies that we can pass down to our children. But there's also strategic plans in place as well. And like you said, a liquidity event. If you're getting $1 million a year on your master's and you have an opportunity to sell it for $100 million.
Yeah, or even 80.
Yeah. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? Yeah, if you're going to blow the money, then no.
But
if
people act like it's such a bad thing. Like, oh, you don't own
ridiculous.
Your master's.
Oh,
you know?
Like, why would you do that?
Not owning your master's is a bad thing if you just come in. And
it's worth.
But if it's worth something that you could sell it, but that's the power of ownership, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't sell what you don't own.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett had, like, what, 50 investors when he first launched?
Yeah.
Because he went to a bunch of doctors and got like a certain amount of money from each doctor.
And then had success with that, left, and then started to build things on his own. And then also people forget, Warren owns the most real estate as well. Yep. Like, he owns a ton of commercial properties. So what I want us to do collectively is to invest long-term in the stock market, learn how to trade, learn how to build companies. But more importantly, we have to come together and support everyone's businesses. Because I think it's a huge mistake, and this Jay situation highlights it. You can have a bunch of power, but I think if we teamed up, there would be a lot more. We always talk about moats. So that's a protective mechanism around a business.
Yeah, what separates you
if
from
you're doing business with people in the industry and the culture and the fan base, it's almost impossible to be canceled. because your fan base and your investors will be the same group.
But that one person can fuck it up, though. That one person can fuck it up for everybody. And that's the question I wanted to ask y'all about. Like, is it even worth being on social media nowadays if you have a business? Because look at, what was that company that just lost all of that money because somebody put out a fake tweet on Twitter?
Eli Lilly.
Yeah.
They were falling a little bit before that.
And even Kanye. Kanye literally lost his business because of a tweet on social media. I mean, he doubled down. He doubled down and tripled down after.
I mean, I think that's
that was the initial
rare
one.
The Drake chance, I think, is what did it for him.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think we need to be on social media to promote the business, but my thing has been, like, let someone else run it. Like, I'll come up with some of the content and let them, because we have to use that vehicle. Yeah. We can't shy away from it.
I think during the pandemic, we really learned that a lot of businesses that didn't have an online presence, it was hard for them to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have an online presence, how do you reach the masses at this point? Like, the way that people advertise is completely different. Mm-hmm. And even if you look at companies, they're cutting back on advertised spending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you have a platform where you have low overhead to no overhead, and you can get your message out to us for free, really, right? To people, I don't care if it's 1,000 people, it's 1,000 new people that
I'm talking Twitter in particular, though.
I think so. Wording is very important, right? And they use words to devalue things like social media,
yeah, influencer,
Social media is media,
mm-hmm, that's right.
So, media is extremely important. And how you're growing your brand or getting your voice out there, I don't think there's anything that's ever been created as powerful as social media. Mm-hmm. It's changed our lives, that's for sure. So you have to be responsible with it, though. Yeah. Just same thing like a media. But when you're building your platforms, and this is important to talk about because Black media is extremely important, and I had this conversation with Angela the other day, and a lot of people just think I'll have an Instagram page so I could just post anything, but you have a responsibility.
Yeah.
You don't have just an Instagram page. You have a media outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're posting things that's just detrimental, that's ignorant, that's reinforcing stereotypes, well, you're part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're not part of the solution, and you're not beneficial. So when something happens and somebody gets killed, then you actually, you know, saying rest in peace is not really even sincere because you're actually contributing to the culture that is leading to young men getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a responsibility that people in media have to take more serious, because when you look at Black media and 95% of it is celebrity and gossip based, then it goes to show why we're in the situation that we're in America, mm-hmm, where a country like China, you know, and TikTok, if you're 14 and under, you don't even get pushed, none of that.
Right.
That's for a reason. They understand the power of that. So a lot of times we don't fully understand the power of what we're doing because the words are so minimal. It's like, oh, an influence, and now they're world leaders.
Yeah.
Very few people in the history of the world have ever had 1 million people that follow them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You have 1 million followers, you have 500,000, you have 100,000 followers, you're in the top 1% in world history. Mm-hmm. So you should take some level of responsibility or at least understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's extremely important. And it's like when growing a brand, understanding the power of social media, how to use social media is important, but it's also understanding what not to post, mm-hmm, what to say, the responsibility of who not to offend. Like, these are all things that we really have to be calculated about.
We were having this conversation in Nashville this weekend. We were just sitting around chopping it up, and I was saying how I think that they're putting too much blame on executives in the record industry. Because to your point, the artists are the ones making the music. I don't think the executives care that much other than to make some paper.
But if we're funding drill music at scale, I'm from East Chicago, Indiana, 25 minutes from Chicago. If we're funding that in LA, Chicago, and New York, people are going to gravitate to what pays them. So I know rappers have to take responsibility, but going back to the same Sam Bankman-Fried conversation, if the VCs are funding all these crypto projects and they're saying, get us the best gain so we can get the best return, we have to look at the labels in the same capacity and say, you're funding the killing, and when they die, you're keeping their masters and sales are going up. That would not be legal in any other industry.
Yeah, I mean, we have to fix that. Just from an accountability standpoint, mm-hmm, right? Think about that. Like, if you know that's the case, from the overarching theme, like, who's accountable for that, mm-hmm, right? Because you are structuring these deals and you are promoting it at your gain. Mm-hmm. Now, you got the people who are the artists, almost like the pawns in it. Like, they're looking at it from a standpoint like, it's a chance for me to make money,
mm-hmm,
right? But it's also a chance to you to be a tremendous detriment to the community at Absolutely. The same time. So the people that are constructing these deals, right, there's got to be a certain level of accountability, because you can see the long-term effects of it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why this is important. Like, even these conversations and mm-hmm platforms are important, because it's like, hey, this is a different viewpoint, but it's an important viewpoint.
I feel, has it gone too far, though? Because we say drill, but drill's no different than what trap music gangsta. Was, no different than what gangster rap it's was, different. No different than what 50 Cent was doing.
It's different because the messaging now. is progressively gotten worse. And it's so crazy because, you know, I have a son, my son, shout out to Nas, he's 11. So he was like, I want to go to Sugar Hill. Can you take me to Sugar Hill?
Why?
And when he said, no, but when he said that.
You know, see, you just shit on drill music and Sugar Hill again. Why? What is
it? I've had a bunch of people that have died.
No, but the thing about Sugar Hill is that for me, AZ, one of my favorite rappers of all time. Mm-hmm. So when I think of Sugar Hill, I'm thinking AZ's song, Sugar Hill. Mm-hmm. And when AZ made that song, Sugar Hill, that movie Sugar Hill in Harlem during the Harlem Renaissance was like the crown jewel of Harlem. Mm-hmm. That was like the best block in Harlem. That's where like all of the wealthy black people lived in Sugar Hill. So that's why when AZ made that song Sugar Hill, he's from Brooklyn, but that song Sugar Hill was like a metaphor of like he wants to live the good life. And then I'm like, what do you know about Sugar Hill? And then there's a drill rapper, I don't want to mess his name up, but it's D.D. Osama, I think his name is. And he's like, he's from Sugar Hill. And he was like, that's like the hood. And but it's just so crazy how a narrative changes. Then I'm starting to listen to the music, and then like his friend was 14 years old. D.D. Osama's friend is 14 years old and got stabbed to death.
Yikes.
And D.D. Osama has beef with K-Flock. He's educating me on it. Yeah. I don't know none of this.
K-Flock's in prison.
K-Flock's in prison. Yeah. So I say that to say it's like this drill music is extremely powerful to young people. Mm-hmm. Like my son, 11 years old, he don't even know nothing about that. But the fact that he's actually so entrenched and understanding the drill culture is like after a while, even if you're the best kid in the world, if you are constantly listening to somebody say, I'm going to smoke my ops and da 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 da, it has its effects on you. And it's like a lot of these kids are dying.
Yeah.
14 years old, 60. These kids are young kids. So it's like the drill music, I think, is a lot more violent.
You think so? Come on, so man. Onyx, throw your guns in the air. 50 Cent, if it's beef, cocking and dumping, the drama really means nothing. I drop by and blow your brains out.
Yeah, you're naming it, but was it balanced at that time? Right?
No, not really.
So if you had Onyx, you had Tribe Called Quest, right? You had different types of sounds. You had Jay, you had Nas, you had different levels of
and
balance.
And the Golden Era, how many dominates? Rappers died from gun violence? Now it seems like every month, someone, like I said, I'm from East Chicago, Indiana. There's a lot of killings that were happening in Chicago before a lot of Chicago rappers were popular. Also, mm-hmm. if you're going to talk about generational wealth, notice that these drill environments for music are also in areas in which the banks and hedge funds want to take over that property. So when we get to gentrification, if you have a bunch of killing, a bunch of violence, at some point legislation is usually passed, happened in Detroit, right, which you're an investor in. Mm-hmm. Like the violence was big in Detroit, and then that got gentrified. It's happening in Chicago. It's happening here. So that kind of music is being used as a way to push us out of our communities as well.
Really?
Yes.
Break that down, Ian.
Because if you're looking at the stats, decade over decade, if we have more violence in these cities, the politicians are going to say we need to clean up the neighborhoods. And then if you clean up the neighborhoods, what do? You normally push the people out that are, mm-hmm. quote, causing all the problems. Then the value is being pushed up dramatically. So at no point do the drill rappers who get killed get their masters usually, their families are not taken care of, and we're losing their real estate. And then all of a sudden, we'll have the like you said, RIP on social media, but the economics are not coming back into our households and our communities. So it is being used as a mechanism to be able to take away from us.
You see, Mayor Eric Adams was talking about banning drill music, and there was a huge backlash.
I saw him yesterday. Yeah. Let me ask, what do you think your responsibility is as you guys don't have radio programming, but you're still in radio?
Mm-hmm.
What is your responsibility? How do you feel about drill music? Or not just drill music, but just music in general? Because it's like if you're talking about popping pills and drinking lean and smoking your ops, and what do you think your responsibility is as a, like, what do you guys feel about that?
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I'm 44, so I've been seeing this since the 90s, since the rise of, you know, gangster rap. So a lot of it for me was normalized until I got older and you start to be like, oh, no, you know what I mean? But for me, I think my responsibility as a personality is just to at least try to provide balance, you know, like in conversations like this, mm-hmm. or even just hearing some of that stuff and being like, nah, bro, that ain't it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like when I heard Moneybagg Yo say he's trying to find therapy in his cup, you know, like I'm like, nah, that ain't the line that we should be
champion.
Nah, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's all I can do.
Well, Angela?
I mean, but with as far as that, I mean, that is what really happens in rap and not. People do try to find therapy, and that's an honest thing, right? And so I do feel like...
Does life imitate art, or does art influence life?
I think that art...
influences life.
No, I used to think
no,
that.
No, I think
I thought that until it started being very profitable in the music industry to pretend to be something you're not. And that's why the whole movie CB4 even existed. Yeah, like, there was a lot of people that started pretending just because it was profitable
to
do.
I just think it's about perspective, too, like how you're framing it. Like, if you're saying, I was trying to find therapy in my cup, but now you've realized, you know, it's because that does really happen. It doesn't even matter what field you're
people
in.
People self-medicate.
Yeah, that happens to people all the time. Sometimes people smoke weed because they don't want to think about things. They drink all the time because they're going through something. And so I don't know that that's because of music. I do feel like that's a real thing.
But there's that's the state of where they were at that time, right?
Right.
And I think we had that conversation the other day. It was like, very rarely do we get to see our artists mature. We don't get to see growth. We don't get to see accountability, that's responsibility, because when they try to make that pivot, it's not profitable anymore. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And so, like, if I know that's the new message, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I compare it to when I grew up listening to Nas, and then I heard Life Is Good, and I'm like, wait. This is different. He's talking about daughters. Yeah. I have a daughter. When I heard Jay on 444 talking about responsibilities inside of a marriage, that's different from the guy I heard on Reasonable Doubt. And it was like, yo, that's growth. That's maturation. We've grown with him. Whereas we don't see that. We don't get to that point. We talked about the Jeezy situation. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, I remember when it happened. I'm like, yo, that's growth. Yeah. Everybody was like, yo, he's a sucker of a dude. I'm like, nah, that's growth, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the dude. That's the snowman who just had opposition in his face and was mature about it and left. Mm-hmm. Right, peacefully, and now you see the other part. Obviously, Gucci was like, you know, I was wrong. That's also good, but we don't get to see it.
Well, I think, like, look at Lil Baby, somebody like him, for instance. Mm-hmm. When he, and then you see the positive things that he's doing now, even off camera. And then the song, The Bigger Picture, was huge for him.
Yes.
And so I do feel like people, artists, do have that. I just feel like sometimes it's also experience. Like, for us, we don't know better. We don't do better till we know better. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is those experiences and having things happen that help you grow. Because you could tell somebody to do something, but until they have an experience that makes them look at things differently, it's hard for them to grasp that.
But we have to, as older people with experience, at least warn them what's coming.
Right, you can. But I just think about myself. Like, you couldn't tell me what to do until something happened. And I'm like, oh, damn, I can't. You know, and it's unfortunate, but sometimes there's a lot of people that'll tell you what to do.
I mean, but we have to start teaching our kids earlier, because the core of all of this is lack of money. So even if I'm looking at artists that are promoting certain lifestyles, most of them sign bad deals. A lot of shows are not there. They're getting taken advantage of in many ways, and I think that's why these conversations are important. Thank you for having us here. Because I truly believe if we start teaching, I started teaching my son at 2, how to invest and how to trade. Like, if we teach our kids early and that passes into the community, and that's why we always say on the show, like, share the information with your friends, because I truly believe if we can make our communities rich before the streets get to them, we will eliminate a lot of these problems. There will be no desire for drill rap if, like, we can show a 13-year-old how to code, how to trade, how to invest, build media, and now he's making $30,000-$50,000 a month. So we have to use our voice, information, and our light to get to them before the streets does. Because when I was growing up, all the elders would tell the kids to get off the street, but I'm like, you have no alternative for them. We have to get to them before the drug dealers and the street does.
Yeah, and it's like one of those valuable lessons, the difference between entertainment and career.
Yeah.
Like, we had this conversation a few years back where it was like, we grow up thinking, like, rap is going to be our career, whereas other groups think that that's just entertainment, right? Because the career is going to be in other fields.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It might be in investing, it might be in finance, it might be in education, but we only see sports and entertainment. That's why I said, like, growing up, it was like, all right, that's the only things we could aspire to be.
Yeah.
But now, like, especially with having media, especially black media, that, like, people like us and people others in the space, they're showing different outlets. So now the education piece, you're not going to sign that bad deal, or you're not looking like, yo, this is the only way to make it out. Like, I just watch guys make $10,000, you know what I'm saying? Like, in a year of investing. And so it changes the trajectory, right? When we expose them to education and change the mindset and change what they think they can be, it changes the whole community.
What do you think we can do to make that cooler, though?
I think it's happening now. I mean, even if you look at the last, decade, the three biggest rappers of the last decade ain't even on that. Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole. Yeah. I mean, you know, Future's probably the fourth person I would put on that that list, right? But it's like those three they're not even on that.
Yeah.
No, it's happening. We need more amplification. That's me and 19 Keys was talking about this. We had a live, and it's like, all right, we go to London and we sell out Royal Albert Hall, which is the most prestigious venue in Europe and one of the most prestigious venues in the world. And it's 98% black people in there. That's something that needs to be amplified, not just for our own self-gratification, because it's an important message. Mm-hmm. And it's a very symbolic message. Just like the MSG situation, it's very symbolic. And this needs to be championed by everybody, because it's like, all right, there's no more important issue than financial literacy mm-hmm. right now for our community. Because financial literacy, like you said, it goes to health, it goes to mass incarceration, it goes to politics, it goes to everything.
Yeah.
So if we can get out thousands of people, whether it's InvestFest, whether it's New York, whether it's London, this is a global phenomenon. This means that people are interested. This means that the conversation is changing. But we need help. Mm-hmm. We need help amplifying that, and we need help showing that, because everybody's not aware of it. If you're not in the space, you might not have known what have happened. But it's just like how we hear the same song on the radio every day, and then we like, okay, I know 21 Savage and Drake have an album because every outlet is posting it.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing it every single time. So even if I'm not a 21 Savage or Drake fan, I'm at least aware of what they have going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The same thing needs to happen when a financial literacy movement that you see is making changes and is happening. And we are getting, you know, a lot of attention. And shout out to you guys. You guys have championed us. But
always,
we need more of it from everybody. And like I said, this is something that is extremely beneficial. And this is how we start to change the narrative. Narratives are very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the narrative being the only black people, basketball players and rappers, no. The narrative is that we can start media companies. Yeah. We can be investors. We can have trucking companies. We can be public speakers. Like, that's a new narrative. Not to say that anything is wrong with sports and entertainment, but there has to be a balance. And the only way to create that balance is to show an alternative.
Can I ask you guys to get all in y'all business, since we're talking about
this?
Here
we go.
Let's go.
What are the plans long-term for Earn Your Leisure? We know, tell us about the Steve Harvey situation. Do you plan to go public, since we were talking about valuations?
Yeah, for sure.
Shoddy, like, I don't like this question.
I mean, y'all be asking everybody else now. I want to know.
Cut the lights off. I think that Steve Harvey has been a great relationship for us, and that's
Move
something.
Steve. Yeah, Steve.
He invested in Earn Your Leisure.
He did not invest in Earn Your Leisure, but we did partner on InvestFest.
Okay, so he's part of the festival.
Yeah, he's a partner in InvestFest, and I'm sure we'll probably do a lot more things together with him as well. Because he's a very, you know, astute businessman, and he sees the value in what we have created. So he's looking to, you know, to do more things with us, and we're looking to do more things with him. And as far as the brand of Earn Your Leisure, I think that, you know, we've created a very good a media company that can grow to become one of the top media companies in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal, is to really grow it as big as Al Jazeera's and grow it as big as Complex or bigger. And, you know, that all encompasses the live events, that encompasses content, that encompasses education, that encompasses a lot of different things that we have going. And as far as it would be great to have it on the stock exchange, mm-hmm. especially since we talk about stocks so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's something that would be extremely important, and another symbolic gesture for the culture to see, you know, a company that started with a couple of iPhones, and you literally start from one follower on Instagram. Some people have been with us since we had 100 followers from day one. It started as a podcast, then goes to a podcast network, and then grows to a media company, then has live events, then has an educational component, and then, you know, has a lot of other people that are encompassed in the situation, whether it's 19 Keys, whether it's Ian, whether it's Andrew Mortgage Guy, whether it's Wall Street Trapper, you know, a lot of different people. So I think that it's a great story to tell, because it's black people working together.
Yeah.
It's happening in real time. It's bootstrapped. Is working with our friends, all of our people that work for Earn Your Leisure, people that we grew up with.
Would you put Earn Your Love under that?
Earn Your Love is 100% coming under the umbrella.
Yes. But think about that. when we talk about a narrative, like, imagine now seeing that. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen companies get publicly traded, but we didn't know how they started. People literally have watched this from the dining room.
In real time.
Right. This is happening in real time. Right. Yeah. So that's the power of media and I guess social media. Is like, people have literally watched it. They've seen us on iPhones. They've seen us. We told them the equipment we were using. We told them we were going to be here. We shook hands. We met all these people. We talk about all these things. And now it's a narrative, but it's also a learning experience. Mm-hmm. This is like the real Nat Geo. Like, you're watching us do this in real time. Yeah. And so to see a company that can go public or have a billion-dollar valuation, it's like, think about the aspiration it does for a generation of people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, kids are looking like, yo, that was my teacher. Yo, I remember when I used to watch him play ball. Yo, I remember when he was in Indiana walking the hall. Like, they're watching this happen and they know the people. So it makes it completely relatable, but it makes it aspirational too.
But also, just one last thing I wanted to say that's extremely important. It's also important for us to help grow other brands as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, we partner with Charlamagne and the Black Effect Podcast Network because we see the value in that and we see the value in collaboration. Mm-hmm. We partner with Revolt because we see the value in Revolt. I like what they're doing over there. Shout out to DeTavio and Dion and Diddy and all of that. These are things that we're not afraid to work with other people. It's like we have our thing, but it's not 100%. We have to have everything ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, let's put a show on Revolt. Let's have our podcast on this network. Like, this is how, as he gets bigger, we're going to get bigger. And as we get bigger, he's going to get bigger. Mm-hmm. And this is what Steve Harvey sees, right? So it's like, all right, Steve Harvey is already up a couple $100 million, but he sees the value in us on a grassroots level and how we can help amplify his voice to a younger generation. So we're beneficial to him, and he's beneficial to us. So that's extremely important. I want to hammer that in. A lot of times people are too self-centered, and they're too concerned about what they have going on, and they don't want to work with anybody else. We have to stop doing that. The only way to go to that billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar valuation is collaboration.
That's right.
You never built anything by yourself. There's no such thing as self-made. You have to work with other people. Absolutely. You have to work with other brands. You have to work with other companies. You have to know how to negotiate. You have to be diplomatic. You have to be, you know, a gentleman. Like, these are all things that's extremely important. It's like the narrative of being a hot-headed businessman that's yelling at people, cursing at people.
Well, that might in real time is not working.
It's not.
No. You got to buy that 1942 for everybody.
By the way, it's never worked. It's never worked.
We're the only culture that does not pride ourselves in team together. Like, all the banks work together. All that, like, we were at the exchange, company went public. All the banks that you see warring against each other, they were all listed as partners as one. So we've teamed up and done stuff. They're doing stuff with Steve. Me, Alex, and Weezy teamed up, did the studio in L.A. Like, the only way to create generational wealth is to build with your friends.
That's right.
And then we have to put ego away. And like you said, you can't be a high head and go off. Like, that's Tupac's my favorite person. Like, going back to the culture of rap, and I didn't even know back then, like, Tupac was claiming blood, setting all, knowing that he didn't grow up in that. One small hot-headed mistake ended up costing him his life. So, like, I think we need
to have... Well, it wasn't one.
It was multiple.
A series of things.
That one in Vegas.
So, but when you have counsel and you have friends that can check you and say, hey, no, brother, you're doing this wrong. Fix this here, or maybe we need to progress here. That's why I always tell everyone, let's figure out ways to team up and do more things. Like, I'll talk to Jeff from 85 and be like, hey, what we can work on. Like, we have to continue to grow, because I hated that Rockefeller, Murder, Inc., Rough Riders back in the day didn't do more, but now we are in a position to be that and do that kind of, like, Cash Money tour. Like,
this when is the new Hard Knock Life tour.
Absolutely, because, like, if Jay-Z and Murder, Inc., if they would have just put in $13 million in 1996, just, let's say, into Apple or any fund, till this day, they would be up $7.5 billion and never have to release the album.
I don't think they had the tools, though. I get what you're saying. Yeah. They didn't have people teaching them financial literacy back then. And just even on the I'm a mental health advocate, so it's just like mental and emotional health keeps you from being that angry hothead who's projecting all your insecurities on the other people. I don't think they had those tools back then.
Can you give us three tips to be more peaceful? Because I really admire you. And Troy, every time I talk to y'all, no matter what happens, you guys are like happy. Me and Rashad working on it.
My inner Dame dad.
Rashad always want to argue with everybody for no reason.
I mean, the biggest thing I tell people is go to therapy, number one. You know what I mean?
And then, how do you find a good therapist, though?
It's going to take it takes a while. It's not easy. You know what I mean?
You answered this wrong, man. We're going to lead with our wives. Oh, the root.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. I was going to say God. I mean, mine is therapy, God, and black women. So my wife, you know what I mean? But definitely. But, you know, like, definitely start with therapy. Therapy is the gateway drug to it all, I think.
Gotcha.
Okay. Therapy. Therapy is the gateway drug to it all.
That's right.
Hashtag that.
Mm-hmm. Market Mondays live with Earn Your Leisure. Ian Dunlap, Sunday, November 27th, Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden. Are tickets even still available?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
They are. You can go to earnyourleisure.com, marketmondays.com, tab on our website. Yeah, it's a few tickets left, so get them. And it's going to be a night to remember.
A time will be had.
1 year of Stock Club, which normally costs 10 grand when you get a ticket. 1 year of Sniper, which teaches you how to trade. So if you need a quick target, 123 points on the Dow or NASDAQ. If you trade 33 contracts, it's $20,000.
Ian, speak English.
What are you saying? The market is falling. Okay. And it goes up 123 points.
Yes.
You can make money as it goes up.
Okay.
If it goes down, you can make money as it goes down. Right? So I'm giving them a target to use every day. Because normally when a Dow goes up or down or NASDAQ, it normally goes up 400 or 500 points.
Gotcha.
123 points is the easy target we can use to be able to make money. And I mean, that was funny, but we will hear, and the reason why it may not sound like English, and maybe we need a therapy and financial literacy segment that we can partner on, but if we're hearing rappers talking about selling drugs openly on air, why aren't we having these conversations about where this sounds like English to the culture?
That's true.
That's the fluency part.
That's very true. Yeah.
That's why I said, like, we focus so much on just being literate, but, like, yeah, that's the ability to read and write. But now let's have the next conversation with we're actually fluent in the language.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't sound foreign to you anymore. Yeah.
So that was a stock tip you just gave.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Got you. It was just a segue. I didn't know what you were doing. I didn't know what you were doing.
We appreciate you guys. Yeah.
So
go to earningleash.com, markmondays.com, get your tickets. Floyd Money Mayweather, we have a conversation with him. Don Peebles, billionaire real estate developer. Jadakiss will be performing. We got Peter Tuckman. We got Mouse Jones. We got Sussman. We got all of us. We're going to be there.
You guys coming?
And a bunch of surprises.
And that was exclusive, by the way, that Floyd Mayweather is going to be having an exclusive
one-on-one. That's exclusive one-on-one. Exclusively dropped on the Breakfast Club.
Love y'all.
The champ.
Hey.
Champ is here. We kids should do that. The champ is here.
The champ is here. It's Ernie Leisure. It's Ian Dunlap. It's the Breakfast Club.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.